Regional Affairs Committee will now come to order. It is 8:05 a.m., Thursday, April 5th, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Tallarico, Representative Parrish, Representative Lincoln, Representative Drummond, and myself, Representative Zelkowski, co-chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin today's hearing, I would like to thank Lori Rowland, the House Community and Regional Affairs Secretary, and Leah Kraft from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. Today we will again be hearing House Bill 390 as well as Senate Joint Resolution 4 for the second time. We will begin with Senate Joint Resolution 4, Alaska Legal Use Exemption. We have staff Jim Puckett, staff to Senator Olson in the room available for questions. He has distributed a memo clarifying some questions from Tuesday's hearing. Does anyone from the committee have further questions for Mr. Puckett? Okay. Seeing none, we have one amendment offered by Co-Chair Parrish that I would entertain a motion for.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one.
Are there any objections?
Where is it? I'll object to my amendment for the purposes of explanation. It changes the word Alaska to Alaskan and on lines 14 on page 1, line 6 on page 2, and on page 2, line 11.
Brief at ease. Okay, we are back on record.
Madam Chair, I'd like to restate my motion.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move conceptual amendment number one, which changes Alaska artists to Alaskan artists on page 2, line 6 and 11, and page 1, line 14.
Are there any objections?
Object.
So the amendment brings it into line with common language. My grandfather, for instance, was an Alaskan artist and would have thought it rather odd to be referred to as an Alaska artist. Similarly, if you look online, you'll find that everyone from the State Council on the Arts to Annie Kales we'll talk about I haven't looked into that one, but you'll find Alaskan artist biographies, you'll find work by Alaskan artists. Alaska artists is unusual, and I don't think I've ever heard someone refer to another individual as an Alaska artist. I spoke with the office before considering the amendment.
Can you specify which office?
Oh, the office of the sponsor.
Okay.
And I certainly welcome them forward if they ever have any comment on the subject.
Before moving on, I want to recognize that Representative Rauscher joined us at 8:05 a.m. Good morning. Are there any other comments on the amendment? Representative Drummond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm referring to the University of Alaska Fairbanks News and Information Office style manual. Style tip, Alaska or Alaskan? Alaskan is, and I'm reading from their style suggestions, which I know to be true. Alaskan is a noun describing a person, not a place. It is never an Alaskan city, for example. And their example sentence is, the professors are longtime Alaskans. When you're not using Alaska as a proper noun, use it as an adjective to describe things. Lots of us who live in Alaska love to eat Alaska salmon and berries. And I would point out that in this same document, on page one, referred to page one of the bill, on line 8, on line 6, on line 8, on line 10 and line 14. It's being used appropriately. Coastal Alaska Natives. The use by Alaska Natives. Current Alaska Native culture. Artwork by Alaska artists. Right? If you eliminated the word artists or natives, you can call these folks Alaskans, but that's not what this bill is about. This bill is about the use of ivory by Alaska Natives appropriately. We also are all employees of or appointed to the Alaska State Legislature on line 16 of page 2. And I don't see your, and if you are actually applying this amendment appropriately, you would also be seeking to change the name of the institution on page 2, line 16. Therefore, I object, and I will be voting against this amendment.
May I respond to a...
Actually, I would ask the staff for the bill sponsor to come forward and just to ask if there's a preference that the office has on this particular issue.
For the record, Jim Puckett, staff for Senator Olson, and I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I didn't hear everything that you were saying as I came up to the...
So just the conceptual amendment before the committee is whether to adjust reference to Alaska artists as Alaskan artists, and is there a preference that the sponsor's office has on the grammatical technicalities of the conceptual amendment?
My wife is the grammar expert in our family, and she's going to faint that I'm going to give a comment on this issue here. But after hearing Representative Drummond's explanation, I believe that is, grammatically, that is the correct way to do that.
May I attempt to persuade him to the contrary? Because as Representative Drummond explained, Alaskan describes a person, not a place, and Alaska is the appropriate adjective to describe things, such as Alaska salmon. And if we go forward, Alaskan describes people, and I suppose the question ultimately must be, are we referring to Alaska, are Alaska artists people? Because if they are, then indeed we should refer to them as Alaskan artists. In the case of Alaska Natives, the second word is the one which carries the modifier. And begin.
Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to add in, and I certainly don't have the educational background other than just we discussed age before, years and years of experience. Typically, when the term Alaskan is used, it's for an individual and not for a group. And normally we refer to residents of the state of Alaska, or as Representative Drummond had stated, the Alaska legislature. And typically I think when we use the term Alaskan, it is really just for an individual or identify an individual thing, and it wouldn't be for a group or a plural thing. So I would have to agree with Representative Drummond on this. I think she's correct.
Representative Rafshire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question which would give me some understanding. Am I allowed, I'm not a native, so to speak, so am I allowed to carve mastodon ivory or walrus tusks or any of that? Am I allowed to do that and trade and sell? And I guess what I'm saying here is, if the bill is applying, and I don't know what's wrong with my voice this morning, and it doesn't work, but if the bill is talking about a group of people within Alaska that can do this, and not every Alaskan that lives in the state can do this, and I think that has some bearing on what we're talking about, doesn't it?
Actually, if I may respond to that, I know a little bit of the background. There was a summary of changes which went from Alaska Native artists to Alaska artists, because there are artists who can work Mastodon legally without having to have any Native ancestry. So they simply struck the word Alaska, or they struck the word Native, and were left with Alaska artists, because indeed you can make your living selling Mastodon if you really want to, although it'd be a shame to lose you.
So, Madam Chair, through the chair, I can. This applies to me. This whole bill, I can do whatever's in here. Is that what's said? That's what this is saying.
Mr. Puckett.
Jim Puckett for staff of Donny Olson. In the Federal Marine Mammal Protection Act, only Alaska Natives can work with raw ivory. If you are not a Alaska Native, then you can only work with fossilized ivory. You can only legally work with fossilized ivory. Alaska Natives can work with fossilized and raw ivory, but you cannot work with raw ivory.
Thank you. Thank you, through the chair. And then I will vote with Eric Drummond.
Thank you.
Representative Drummond. I'm sorry.
Representative Drummond, do you maintain your objection?
Absolutely.
Okay. If the clerk could, and you would like to keep your amendment proposed.
If I can sum up.
Sure.
Thank you. So ask yourself which sounds more natural, artwork by Alaska artists or artwork by Alaskan artists? That's all.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
I'm a carpenter, and you really don't want to know what sounds natural for me, so I'm going to go with the English teacher.
I guess I can back that up as a final comment. I'm not an English teacher. I was just a school board member, but I edited other people's copy for over 30 years as a professional graphic designer. I have been lectured by people who know far more than I do about this very subject, and been shown the AP style manual for how this is done. And I believe the AP has a style manual section just for Alaska, and I guarantee you it's going to say the same thing. And in the spirit of demonstrating that this amendment is not a complete amendment, I would propose a conceptual amendment that you'd make the same change on page 1, line 6, page 1, line 8, page 1, line 10, page 1, line 14, page 2, line 13, page 2, line 16, and page 2, line 27. Change the occurrence of Alaska in every situation to Alaskan, and it's used the same way as a modifier to the subject that follows it. And you will understand where I'm coming from.
But that's, if I could clarify, is that an actual conceptual amendment that you're proposing this morning?
It ought to be the maker's conceptual amendment, because that is exactly what he is proposing, and his amendment is therefore incomplete. So I'm going to withdraw my conceptual amendment and continue to hold my objection to the amendment.
I'll remind you, Alaskan describes a person, not a place. So someone can be a native of Alaska. A legislature can be of Alaska. But an artist is a person, and therefore I'll stand behind my amendment.
Okay, so we've had a couple of rounds of wrap-up. And we've spent an inordinate amount of time talking about very technical things that I do not want to see withhold the progress of such a great resolution. So if we could have the clerk please call the roll on...
Representative Lincoln?
No.
Representative Drummond?
No.
Representative Tallarico?
No.
Representative Rauscher?
No.
Representative Sadler, not present. Co-Chair Parrish?
Yes.
Co-Chair Zolkowski?
No.
5 nay, 1 yay.
So with a vote of 5 nay and 1 yay, the conceptual amendment fails. Are there any further amendments? Okay, seeing none. There is a zero fiscal note that was provided by Legislative Affairs. Is there any discussion on the fiscal note or any other points of discussion on the resolution from the committee? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Madam Chair, I move 30-LS0109/U from committee with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, committee substitute for SJR4 passes from committee. We will go at ease while members sign the committee report. All right. We will now again hear HB 390, primary ranked choice voting, for the second time. We will open up the bill for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? If you could step forward to the testifier table and put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Carla Hart. I'm here representing myself. I learned about ranked choice voting quite a few years ago and actually tried to do an initiative for Juneau and didn't have enough traction at the time because people thought it was too complicated. I'm really glad to see this bill before you, and I hope that you really look at it. What I've seen, especially on a municipal level, but also on a state level, is the spoiler effect of having two people who have similar political positions who split votes and perhaps end up with a third candidate who has less support for that segment or that, if we just go party, if you have two of one party and one of another, you could end up with a minority representation of your district because of splitting votes, because of the spoiler effect. And you also have a situation where the people are voting for who they think they should vote for because they have a best chance of winning, as opposed to who really reflects best their values and beliefs. So I urge the committee to pass this bill. I know it doesn't have a huge chance of making it through the whole legislature, but to move the discussion along, because it will make our election system more democrat, more reflective of the people and their votes, and I think it will encourage more people to be willing to go and vote because they'll feel like they can vote who they really want to vote for instead of voting for someone they may not embrace but they've been told is who they should vote for because the other person doesn't have a chance. So I really hope that you move this along and pass it. Thank you.
It looks like you have a question, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And thank you for being here, Ms. Hart, and for your testimony. Although I don't necessarily disagree with you, would you explain why you don't think it's got a particularly good chance in the legislature?
Well, it's fairly late in the legislative session. And the legislature has a lot of business to do, and it's a House bill, and we're in the House.
Yeah, that's fairly
accurate. Sorry, I hope that there's a great public push out there, and you surprised me with this, but it seems that this is the ripening set period of time for the bill.
Thank you again.
Thanks.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify under public testimony? Okay, seeing none. Are there any individuals online for public testimony?
I'd like to treat Ms. Brown as invited testimony.
Okay. All right. There's no one else. There's not anyone else online to testify under public testimony. So seeing no more individuals who wish to testify, I'm going to close public testimony. We will now turn to invited testimony on HB 390. Online for questions, we have Alpheus Bullard from Ledge Legal. And in the room, we have Josie Banky and Brian Jackson from the Division of Elections. If you could come forward and state your names for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Jackson. I'm Program Manager for the Division of Elections.
Yeah, good morning. For the record, my name is Josie Banky, Director for the Division of Elections, and I just want to thank you for the opportunity to bring to the committee's attention the impact this bill would have on the Division of Elections.
All right. So the current tabulation system that is used by the division does not accommodate currently a ranked choice process for counting ballots. The existing system, if we attempted to use it for ranked choice voting, would only be able to tabulate one round of candidates. Therefore, to meet the requirements of this legislation, the division would need to replace our existing tabulation system with a system that would accommodate ranked choice voting to electronically accumulate election results for multiple rounds. In 2017, the division was provided a discussion quote from our current vendor, Dominion Voting Systems, to replace our current system with newer equipment using the same precinct-based system. The quoted cost for replacement was $5,755,455. In a follow-up conversation with Dominion regarding ranked choice voting, the vendor indicated that this would cost an additional $250,000 for the ranked choice voting module. The division's current annual hardware and license fees amount to $152,000. With the new system, the cost will increase to $489,000, which is a difference of $337,000, using round numbers. In addition, for the period of one full cycle, the division will be required to educate the public and inform voters of the changes due to this legislation. The division anticipates spending $200,000 in the first year to conduct outreach to voters with an education mailer and another $50,000 in the second year to educate and inform voters of this new voting style through the use of multimedia. While the division has no objections to House Bill 390, we would like to point out that in Section 5, the bill allows for the voter to vote in order of preference using Roman or Arabic numbers. Our current system does not support character recognition during ballot scanning, and to our knowledge, there are no certified systems that support this type of character recognition as described in this section. We understand that the committee may consider amending Section 5, and the division would support changes to that section. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we're happy to take any questions.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the chance, and I thank you for coming to testify. So, a real quick question, how many other states use these type of machines that you're talking about that would cost us whatever dollars that you quoted?
I do not know off the top of my head, but we can...
If you could.
Follow up.
And with these new machines, through the chair, with these new machines, would there be multiple counts like we have now?
Through the chair, multiple counts.
They count the ballots a couple of times before they actually put the through the chair, before they actually put it out there, right, as the final number.
Through the chair, yes. We would still through this quote, we would retain a similar system as we have currently, where we would have multiple rounds of counting ballots. Yes.
And through the chair.
Proceed.
Do we still get a paper ballot to fill out with this new system?
Through the chair, yes. It would be very similar to what we currently have.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, of the fiscal note, you mentioned, what was it, about $5.7 million for the new voting machines?
Through the chair, yes.
Yes. How much of that would be necessary in the absence of this legislation?
I'm sorry, can you clarify your question?
It's my understanding that even without this legislation, that's a cost which you anticipate bearing. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes. The division is definitely looking into replacement of the voting system due to its age.
Paula? Or I'll defer to Representative Drummond.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Considering the success of the election, the mail-in election in Anchorage the other day, and it seems to be growing in terms of number of ballots being delivered every day. I think they're up to 80,000 ballots delivered. They have shattered all previous records. The mail-in system is saving Anchorage a considerable amount of money. As a former Anchorage Assembly member, I recall that they had to hire upwards of 500 people for a day and a half a day of training and then a full day of work as election workers, staff and equip 120 polling places. And I can, what is it? It's upwards of 400 precincts in the state of Alaska, isn't it, Madam Director?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's correct. The state currently has 441 precincts that we staff on election day. So statewide, those numbers for the division go up from 28 full-time employees to around 2,500 around the state. So
worse than I thought. Thank you, through the chair. So I would hope that you would look at the lesson being shown us in Anchorage and other states that are moving to mail-in ballots. I think it would make life a lot easier. I can see where it might cause some issues in terms of folks who need interpreted ballots, language issues, visual issues, that kind of stuff. But in general, mail-in balloting is going to save a whole lot of money. Yes, you will need new equipment to read whatever ballots you're going to choose, but all that equipment will be, I assume it will be at the Division of Elections in one location where all the ballots will be counted. And I don't expect you'll have to spend the millions and millions of dollars you're talking about to replace all that equipment. I know that Anchorage borrowed that equipment from the state for many years, and it was getting worn out. It was giving them problems. The election workers always had backup, batteries, software, whatever, or entire backup machines, and they'd have to be running around town in the middle of the day to get a replacement counting machine in order to complete the work at the individual polling station. So you can imagine they had issues with traffic and all kinds of stuff, as well as actually running out of ballots one time, but that's a different issue. So that's my comment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. And just a follow up on some of the things that Representative Drummond raised. Would or could a ranked choice voting system be compatible with a mail-in system? And if so, could that help defray the cost of the mailer and the confusion that people might experience?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, yes, I do believe we could still use the new ranked choice voting by mail ballots. As far as deferring costs, are you talking about voter education, that piece?
Yeah, I'm imagining that if I get my ballot in the mail and it says in clear writing, mark 3 in descending order, or it'd be easy to understand, particularly if I had time to sit down and maybe have a family member explain to me what the system was supposed to be like. And I know that already there are examples marked on ballots of what properly marked things should look like. So we're going to be if we were to mail everyone their ballot anyways, it seems like we could save a little bit on the costs by having an extra instructional sheet in the same envelope.
Through the chair, I think in the way the current legislation is written, it is dictating that the division would have to have this additional voter outreach starting in an off year leading up into the election year. So I think we would still would like to send out the education piece or, you know, and educate the voters. But yes, I think we could also include additional instruction with a mail ballot if that is how we ended up moving.
I recall, I think it was North Carolina spent $200 statewide for the education, and granted that was with the generous support of their public broadcasting service. But I don't stipulate the amount that you got to spend in here, and if there are ways to economize, I'll put it on the legislative record that I'm supportive.
It looks like the Ms. Banky, you have a response?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Parrish, for the purpose of the, for this fiscal note, we used the discussion quote for the replacement of a precinct-based system. Alternatively, we did speak with our vendor about replacing with an all-by-mail system. And the difference between the two cost-wise was the $5.7 million for the precinct-based system and approximately $1.7 million for the all-by-mail system. So just to give you perspective on that. And also with regards to the outreach, we calculated that $200,000 based on an average price for like a ballot pamphlet, a ballot measure pamphlet. So that's, we just figured, you know, sending out a pamphlet statewide education, educating voters about the ranked choice voting. So that's where that number came from.
Sure, thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it took Anchorage 2 years to educate their voters. And they have elections every year, so they had to fit it in among everything else they were doing. But 2 years' worth of planning apparently has paid off. You know, let's wait until it's all counted and certified and see how it goes. But you can expect, I'm sure, to spend that much money, I mean that much time in terms of educating voters. You also put out the official election pamphlet. There can be several extra pages in there that describing exactly what to do with the ballots at that point, because that document goes to every voter,
correct,
as I understand it, too.
So I actually have a question. As a representative for a largely rural district, I am curious if the cost estimates that the division has provided this morning for voter education takes into account the significant amount of resources that it takes to communicate to rural communities? And are there challenges or resources that have been identified with what it would take to educate voters that may have English as a second language as considerations that the division has made?
Madam Chair, good question. It's not something that we've discussed as a division relative to ranked choice voting. It is a large part of our discussion as we, with the Lieutenant Governor and the Election Policy Work Group. You know, one of their mantras has been, you know, if it doesn't work for rural Alaska, it won't work for Alaska. So the replacement of any system, certainly that has been kind of a central focus to as we explore a new system.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. For the, excuse me, many ranked choice voting jurisdictions ultimately do away with primaries. What would the fiscal impact be for the state if, down the line, the partisan primaries were to recede in importance or to be eliminated?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, on average, and I can follow up with the committee on a kind of a detailed total for the cost, average cost for a primary, but typically over the past probably 6 to 8 years, the cost total is about $1.2 million.
Okay. And if that were to, if primaries were to be dispensed with, we'd save about $1.2 million every 2 years. Is that approximately right?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, thank you for your testimony this morning. We also have an individual on the off-net who has been invited for testimony. Kay Brown, are you on the line?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is Kay Brown. Can you hear me?
We can. If you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm speaking for myself today. I am retired. I'm a former state legislator and became familiar with this issue a few years ago when it was voted on in the 2002 primary in Alaska. And a similar ballot measure, it was ballot measure one at the time, did fail overwhelmingly. 63.7 voted against it and 36% voted for it. At that time, I did a lot of analysis of it and became convinced that this was not the best system to adopt for Alaska. It may sound good in theory and it may work in other jurisdictions, but I think there are some things that we should consider about how that would play out in our state. My largest objection is that this whole concept seems to violate the well-established principle of one person, one vote that we have coming down from the United States Supreme Court. The fundamental problem is that it lets some voters vote more than once. If they vote for a last-place candidate, then their vote is redistributed to their second choice, and that process would continue until somebody gets a 50% plus one majority. So those voting for the least popular candidate or candidates would get extra leverage and would get their vote counted multiple times, giving them the extra opportunity to determine the outcome, whereas others would only have their vote counted once. And I think this is fundamentally unfair way to set up the system. I know that in other places this is proposed or it's sometimes referred to as instant runoff voting in order to avoid runoffs or too many runoffs. If you have multiple candidates, it's hard for any candidate potentially to get to 50%. We don't have that requirement in Alaska for a supermajority of 50% plus one in order for a state candidate to win. So this is really not a problem that needs to be fixed, in my opinion. There's no compelling reason that we need to change our optimum model voting system that we have in Alaska now. I think, as you've heard in the other testimony, it would involve extra expense and potentially more confusion, at least in some respects. For example, how would the results be reported? Would we get a report of how everybody voted in round one and then how the votes were redistributed in round two and multiple times, or are we only going to see the final, or how? What would that look like? And if we don't see every step of the redistribution, I think it would add a lot of uncertainty and concern on the part of the voters to understand exactly what had happened. So picture a race such as we frequently have for Congress or the United States Senate, where you do have many candidates and you could have multiple reports that would be difficult, much more complex for the division and for the voters to sort through that. I'm wondering, as I think about this proposal now, how it would affect political party status. As you're aware, there is a requirement that to qualify for status as a political party, your candidate has to get a certain percent of votes. I don't recall offhand what that percent is, but in a statewide election, they have to get so many votes in order to qualify to be a recognized political party and have a spot recognized on the primary ballot. So would we be counting only the first choice votes, or would we be counting the ultimately redistributed second and third and fourth or however many down the rank votes? How would that be addressed? I think that needs to be addressed in this legislation if it were to move forward. In summary, I'll just say I don't see a need for this. I'm not clear what problem it is we're trying to solve with this legislation, and would urge you not to move it forward at this time. Thank you for listening to my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Are there any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Kay, for calling in. I'm really glad I had this chat with you. I recalled how disturbed you were by this whole process a number of years ago. I find if I simply do the math on, for example, the ballot for Anchorage's mayor the other day, there were about 7 or 8 or 10 candidates, and I can guarantee you that I would not vote for several of those people. I'm not impugning anybody's reputation. Everyone has a right to run for office, and often do. But in that case, I might only mark my ranked choice ballot 4 or maybe 5 times, while somebody who marks their ballot for all 10 candidates definitely gets more votes, because each time it rolls through the addition, I can see how the math would work, and I absolutely agree that it's a problem regarding the concept of one person, one vote. Thank you so much.
Representative Perry.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony, Representative Brown. Do you remember what the voter turnout was for our last general?
Not offhand.
Would you, broadly speaking, would you support something which would probably result in a higher voter turnout?
Not if it compromised our fundamental constitutional right to one person, one vote. I do support looking at vote by mail, which I think in Anchorage is being shown to increase voter turnout and participation. So, yes, I agree we need to be concerned about voter turnout. I just don't think this is the best approach to do that.
Paula?
Proceed.
Thank you. So, I appreciate your concern that someone voting for a candidate who's unlikely to win would have their vote eliminated and then transferred to the, I believe the term is single transferable vote, is another way that we talk about this. So it's not the case that in the final tally my vote would be counted a dozen times. You'd still have only the number of votes on the ballot. Well, actually, you'd probably end up with fewer votes overall, because some candidates would be eliminated and would have declined to vote for second or subsequent rounds. But you don't end up with extra votes overall. Why is it that someone who wants to support, let's say, Gary Johnson or another unlikely to win candidate, should not be able to both express that opinion and also vote for the candidate who they feel that they could settle for.
Well, as I've said, the vote is actually counted multiple times. Their vote would be counted initially, and then it would be transferred, and it would be counted again. So that person is getting to, in essence, vote twice or have their vote counted twice. And I think that's unfair in that others would only have their vote counted once. But they're certainly, everyone is free to express their opinion for whoever they think would be the best and to vote for whoever they think would be the best. And I don't believe we need to add this layer of complexity to our system in order to have reasonable and fair outcomes in our elections. And I don't see that this is an improvement over the system that we have presently.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the Chair. At present, if you vote for one of the two most popular candidates, essentially your vote gets counted. And if you vote for a marginal candidate, people commonly say that you're throwing your vote away. Have you heard that?
I've heard people say that.
Do you think that someone voting for a third-party candidate is likely to have their vote make a difference in the final tally?
However they voted will certainly make a difference in the final tally.
Sure. There's Fuller.
Proceed.
Are you familiar with the results that show that in ranked choice vote jurisdictions there's less negative campaigning?
I'm not familiar with that.
I'll be happy to share it with you and of course, Kay.
Are not most of the ranked choice jurisdictions local rather than state?
Yes. There are some.
And do we not generally have less negative campaigning in local elections than we do the higher up you go in the electoral process?
I'm glad you asked, Kay. The difference that I cited is between non-ranked choice vote cities and ranked choice vote cities.
Well, I think generally that looking at the experience in cities may be instructive, but also the city structures are different. They are in Alaska, nonpartisan. We don't have primaries. So I'm not sure that the things that you're looking at are completely applicable to our state election system.
Well, that's all right. Thank you again, Kay.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Brown, for your testimony. Seeing no other invited testimony, that will end invited testimony on HB 390. We will be holding HB 390 over in committee. Our next meeting of Community and Regional Affairs will be Thursday, April 12th. The time is 9:07 a.m., and this hearing of Community and Regional Affairs is now adjourned.